This is a Collider.com audio interview.
I'm curious, for Mr. Russell, just out of curiosity, Mr. Dickey Eklund seems like someone who would take a very active interest in the filming of this movie. Was it at any point necessary to do Eklund management, to have him as a resource, but perhaps
can I,
not?
Can I answer that a little bit? There were a couple of times I had to physically restrain Dickey from going and landing one right on David. We had some initial interesting times when we were rehearsing in Mark's house, where Mark very nicely put up Mickey and Dickey, and actually they lived at his house for some time. And there were some script changes going on, and Dickey wasn't initially totally understanding that sometimes in putting a whole life into 2 hours, a little bit of license has to be taken and mixing things up. He wanted everything initially to be absolutely how it was portrayed. And if it wasn't, it was a couple of times he was like, I'm going to go and hit him. And that's a serious thing coming from a pro boxer. So there's a couple of times I'd be going, no, no, no. And then we'd talk, and David would talk with him. And I'm not sure if you ever had to stop him from coming and laying one on me, you know. It could well have happened as well. But it was interesting. It was an interesting time. But he absolutely came around and, seemed to really understand it. And, after we showed him the movie, he didn't punch any of us, and I talked to him almost daily. So I think that's a great achievement to make the story of someone's life and do that. But anyway, sorry, David, that was more your question.
What he said.
Good answer.
This question is for Christian.
David will answer that one.
Okay, well, you guys tell me how you lose weight. Many times this rapid extreme weight loss, what is your regimen for it, and when you do it, does it help put you in that sort of edgy, jittery place that you needed to be to play Dickie?
No, I felt so good and calm and with playing Dickie, and I was just running like crazy. I could just run for hours on end, and I felt really healthy, I don't know. Usually I always say, oh, I do a lot of coke whenever I lose weight. I'm not sure if it's so funny for this movie to say that. There's not a whole lot of secrets to it. But one really good thing is to have this particular water, Aqua Hydrate. I'm on that house to lose weight. I run a lot. I'll be getting cash from you later, Mark.
Christian, what is your take on Dickie, and do you think he's ultimately a good influence for his brother?
I think that he was an absolute source of inspiration initially, and then I think he probably became an absolute confusion for his younger brother, because it's an immensely loyal family, and they're immensely loyal brothers, but... as you see in the movie, it took Charlene to convince Mickey that it wasn't him abandoning his family to be able to remove himself for a little while in order to change the dynamics. And then once that had been recognized, and once Dickie, who also I think had immense pressure from the family in the expectations they had of him at such a young age, and that through his success, the whole family would have success. And really, I think very much that's a part as well of what was drawn into self-destruction. Once Dickie was able to initiate and say, it's no longer his time, it's Mickey's time now, and then convince the rest of the family of that, which took some doing, then after that, Dickie was no end of help for Mickey. I don't think that it could have happened without the one or the other. You know, this movie wouldn't exist without that beautiful relationship between the two brothers.
Hi, to everybody up there, congratulations on the terrific film. And I want to talk about the Boston accent, which ruins so many films. Everybody up there nailed it, specifically for Christian and Mark. Christian, it seems you went the furthest to get it with your regular accent. How difficult was that? What kind of coaching did Mark help? And for Mark, I imagine you've had that accent drummed out of you over the years. What's it like trying to get it back?
It's a lot harder to get rid of it than it was to get it back. Every time I would leave Boston, people would appear to be like nails on a chalkboard for people hearing that accent. And I've been in other movies that took place in and around that area, and the accents were god-awful, and it's almost to the point where it made it seem like we were doing bad accents, the people who were actually from that area. But no, everybody did a fantastic job and didn't push it too far, even though you think these characters are so extreme and so broad, but they're actually a toned-down version of these larger-than-life characters, so...
Mark was a great deal of help in just, he would never say anything, but you'd just get a certain look on his face when you said something that you just knew that wasn't it. But also, I approached Dickie's accent as, I mean, Dickie's got his own thing going on, you know? He calls it Dickie Knees himself. And I think everyone will agree, like, I really had to tone down his natural rhythm and voice, because I understand him completely now because my ear's in with it, but if I'd done it exactly like Dickie, we would have needed subtitles, probably.
Okay, right here.
Great job, everyone. One of the best Walt films I see, if it's the best. Homage. Mark, the boxing scenes in this film is very realistic, very, I would say it's convincing. And as boxers, I guess they need confidence to compete and win. What point did you gain that confidence to pull off these fight scenes in the film? And Amy, you did a great job in one of the fight scenes in the film. You're convincing with fighting with his sisters. So tell us about that.
Well, I mean, you know, the movie was a go and then it fell apart, and I just continued to train. So after three and a half years, I felt confident enough to go in there and be believable as a boxer who could possibly win the welterweight title. And, you know, if had somebody said, hey, you got to train 4.5 years to make this movie, I would have said absolutely not. But the fact that I was just continuing to do it, never wanted to stop, because I figured if I stopped, and I would be giving up on the movie, and I never wanted to do that. So for me, it was well worth putting in the work. It just, there were times, obviously, when it was harder and more difficult to get out of bed, especially while making another film and training her for a film that may or may not happen. But, you know, it was certainly worth it in the end. Amy?
Well, when I got the role, David informed me that I looked like a girl who couldn't punch, which made me want to punch him. So I actually took just a couple boxing lessons. And that was fun with Mark's trainer, who was fantastic. And then we just did some fight choreography. I think it was about not being afraid of hurting anybody. That was my biggest concern. I didn't want to hurt the girl that I was fighting with. I wasn't afraid of getting hurt myself. I just, when I was younger, my sister thought it was funny to pretend to punch me in the face to tell my, because my mom was concerned about my teeth falling out. They were loose for a long time, and she knocked out my teeth. So I've always been a little afraid of fake punches. So. But it was fun. I had a good time.
Continuing with that, Amy, you aren't the kind of girl who looks like she can punch. David, can you talk about why you chose to cast her? And also, Melissa, both of you went through such incredible transformations.
Do you want to punch
her
right now?
You did. But you both did amazing jobs, and it was a transformative performance on both of your parts. So, David, can you talk about casting both of your female leads, and also if you can comment on your preparation for the roles?
I had been speaking to Amy. We would have lunch every couple of years and talk about wanting to work together, and I knew that she was eager to break type for herself, you know, and in the sense that she had played mostly very sunny women, and she was very eager to play someone against type, and I knew she was going to kill it, you know, and just from talking to her, I knew that she was really ready to step up. And there's nothing better a director can have than somebody who's very eager, like all these people were.
Hello.
I think that means I'm supposed to stop talking. And Melissa, actually, Mark recommended Melissa to me off of Frozen River, and I hadn't seen it, and I watched it, and I thought she was phenomenal. And I was very excited to transform her into the Bleach Blonde. And that's my time.
Melissa, any of you comment on your preparation for the film?
I have to say that I love acting. I really do. I think that's maybe the one thing that is known about me. And although it sounded like an extremely exciting and interesting project, and the notion that it was about real people who are still living and they'd be involved in it, I still had a lot of doubts going and meeting with David, but it sounded interesting enough. I took the meeting, met him at the Maritime Hotel, and sat down. We kind of dived right into starting to work about it. It wasn't really an interview, but there we were working on Alice together over breakfast. And that then went on with another couple of meetings by my recollect, and that was the first stepping off place, was David's belief that I could be his Alice. I thought, well, golly, I'm only a couple years older than these chaps, and I'm not such a pushy gal by my reckoning. You really think so, David? And I don't know how to describe it except a palpable belief that I could be his Alice. He then gave me the opportunity to meet Alice Ward, and I traveled, I'll never forget, because it's the only time I really met Christian before we worked. We flew to Lowell from L.A. together. I watched him meet Dick and begin to take that on. It was an extraordinary thing to watch. And I got to meet Alice Ward, and upon meeting her, saw immediately my mother's mother, my maternal grandmother, in Alice, and knew then that, oh, I have her in here somewhere. So then with Mark Bridges' help and Johnny, who did the hair with David saying shorter, shorter, shorter with every haircut, and Trish Heine, who did my makeup, finally found Alice and walked in her shoes. It was a thrill to walk out of the trailer and have half a Lowell go, oh, Alice, oh, you look like my mother. It's great.
I'll just echo what David said, what Melissa said. David's belief that I could be Charlene, that was like half of the preparation. Like just knowing that he knew I could do it made me feel like I could do it. And then the other half of it was research and also David telling me to lower my voice. He kept going, she's down here, she's low.
But both these women talk like dudes, you know, like you know, and my mother did too. They come from a very deep power place, and the beautiful thing I'll just say that they each brought to the parts that really make them succeed so beautifully is that Melissa consistently fought for the compassion for Alice, as Christian and I initially agreed that Dickie should be someone you love. You know, Mark and I knew that Mickey was someone you loved because he's taking all the heat for the whole movie, for the swirling around him. And it was a question of how you could plug into Mark's emotions, feeling that, and understanding why he would put up with it, why he needed it. That's the heart of the story. Why Mickey wanted these powers that forced him into the championship. That's the crucible that put him there. Charlene and the family and his brother. He got the discipline from the cop in his corner, and he got the inspiration from an older brother who could give him the mantle. You can't get better inspiration than that. An older brother who didn't want to give it to him for a long time. But Melissa always said, we got to love Alice, you know? And I love it, because Alice made mistakes, but Alice loves all of her children. And I thought that was beautiful. Likewise for Amy. You know, Charlene is a tough bitch, you know? And Amy's very fierce. And Amy has that fierceness in her, but Amy also brings a great deal of emotion in her eyes. So you have that great cocktail that I find so interesting of the two.
For Mark, I'm wondering if you can talk about your role as producer and what that entails.
It was just out of sheer desperation for getting the movie made. I had already promised Mickey, Dickie, Alice, Charlene, and everybody else involved that we were going to get this movie made. And it seemed, you know, at first glance, like it was a no-brainer. I mean, amazing parts, what a wonderful story, a really new and interesting world that you're not that familiar with, and it just wasn't meant to be. So it just, you know, we just had to grab a hold of it and force it to happen. Sheer will and determination, but very much like Mickey's journey to winning the title, you know, you just had to go and make it happen, so.
The question's for David and Mark. You guys have obviously worked together a couple of times now, and you obviously personally get along quite well. I was curious what professionally, no?
Oh, yes.
Well, just professionally then, what you each value most about the other.
It's my brother, man.
Thanks, buddy.
I love this guy.
Oh, thanks, man.
You know, we've been through a lot together, and, you know, we're so comfortable with one another. You know, we're like family, and to be able to work with somebody that you admire so much and that you trust and that you care for, it, speaking for myself, of course, I don't really know how David feels, but, no, I just loved it. I mean, you know, when it dawned on me that there is a way to get this movie made with David as the director. We had already, you know, started a relationship with Christian and got him to commit. I thought, we have a chance to make something really special, and David will bring something to the table that I don't think anybody else was really trying to tap into. They thought, well, the story between the brothers is really fascinating, and it's more of a boxing movie, and he brought a level of humor and emotion that I don't think anybody else was capable of bringing to it.
Thanks, man.
I think also a lot of the other people, they were overemphasizing the whole kind of druggy nature, the addiction, as though that was something fascinating to see. And we felt like we've seen that in so many movies. And you don't meet Dickie and Mickey, and it's not what you think about.
Yeah.
You know, of course it's part of his past, but you didn't want to obsess on that, you know. And David's got this great sort of tandem earnestness and complete silliness going on at the same time. To you, which is great, and which would
and if you went down that dark path, I mean, it would be a very limited audience that would go and see this movie. And we thought, you know, it has so much more to offer. And we thought, you know, young, old, men, women would all enjoy the story, and everybody would find something very compelling, as well as entertaining and inspiring about it. So that was what David brought to the table.
It's a real blessing. I'm very happy to be here. You know, I just feel really lucky to be here with this much talent and this much amazing raw material and these characters. I mean, as soon as I saw the raw material that Mark was talking to me about, I just said, oh my God, this is amazing. These characters are amazing. Their world, their dynamic, you know, is amazing. And there's nothing better than having a collaborator that you have a great shorthand with and a great comfort with, who's shepherding the project along. I mean that's the best thing you can have in cinema, where there's many cooks in the kitchen, you know. So it makes life much easier. I didn't know what to expect when I first saw the family. I thought they might be some very harsh people that I wouldn't want to spend 10 minutes with, you know. I thought God, this could. Because I remember hearing about Mickey Ward, and then when I saw him and I heard him talk, I was like, oh my God, he sounds much rougher than I expected, you know. I expected some sweet talk and Oscar De La Hoya type, you know. And the fact is, the people are so unbelievably lovable. You know, as Christian said, I still hang out with them. And that's what goes into the movie. That's the whole thing that goes into the movie.
And I did promise David that after making this movie, our next collaboration would be right back to me, just saying yes sir, no sir, and strictly being there to service his vision, because it was definitely a different dynamic, you know. Me saying, hey, wait, no, what about David? I don't know, this is not, you know, because I was so close to them and to that world. And I think that was the only thing that took a little getting used to, and I promised my leader here that I will not do that again the next time, if we get to work together again.
You can't help it if when I first met him, he was 26-year-old kid mumbling off of Boogie Nights. You could be mumbling everything in a hotel meeting. And then the next, you know, then the time we made this movie, he was like, you know, Boardwalk Empire builder, you know, Godfather. So, you know.
Shit happens, dude. I'm a hustler.
And these guys met at Mark's preschool, the preschool of your daughters, is that right?
Right, yeah, it's down at my door. Yeah, me, yeah.
He looked across the parking lot and saw Christian Bale, and he was like, bing. Right?
I was like, there is the guy who's not scared to play this part. Everybody is like, loves the idea of it, but nobody really wants to commit and go there. And I had seen The Machinist, I had seen Rescue Dawn, and I was like, if he responds to the material, this is, again, you know, a chance for us to make the best possible version of the movie. I could see why people were so attracted to the part, but at the same time, it can be intimidating. But, you know, he's a fearless actor, and he just, you know, he responded to it immediately. And that was, you know, really kind of what got the momentum going, and everything else started to fall into place after that.
And also, like, David's got, he's got a very big heart. It would be very funny. There'd be times and he was often crying with laughter and also just flat out crying. Remember, they'd often be there at Mark's place, and you'd be listening to stories or telling a story or listening to Dickie or whatever, listening to Mickey. And it was either they had his side splitting with laughter and he was bawling his eyes out with that, and then it would seep into tragedy and he'd be bawling his eyes out. Like, you could really see how much he felt it and really enjoyed the company of these guys and was going through a whole roller coaster of emotions, you know, which is usually what the actors are meant to be doing, but David was right in there feeling every little bit of it as much as any of us.
Mm-hmm. There are scenes in the movie I can't talk about without still getting choked up, which is, you know, after you've been with the movie a long time, that's unusual, I think.
Mark, I was just reading that you still have the boxing ring at your house, and I'm just wondering, are you maintaining your program, your regimen, and also you're going to be on 60 Minutes this Sunday. Are there any big revelations that you're going to tell Laura Logan that we should probably know today?
Yeah, nice try.
Unfortunately,
he's not going to notice that one.
I think aside from the movie itself and the story of the making of the movie and how similar Mickey's life is to mine, the story has been told. I mean, you know, I was in a lot of trouble and then I turned my life around, but it makes such a good comparison to Mickey's journey into the story, and you know, that, you know, 9 kids in both families and growing up 30 minutes from each other. I'm hoping that it's not the same old story. But you know, I did have a nice time working with them, and they really, the reason why we did it is because of their reaction to the film. That was the only reason for doing it. I mean, David's talked me into doing stuff like that in the past, whether it's 2020 or Dateline or this and that. But you know, I love this movie, and I would have done anything to get the movie made and do anything to support and promote the movie. It's just, you know, it's that important to me. And we'll see what happens. And I do still have the ring. As far as the regimen, my new regimen consists of a bottle of red wine and a lot of food. And I'm enjoying myself, but my wife is like, you know, you're starting to look really bad. You know, I'm like a former supermodel, Victoria's Secret model. I mean, you want to hold on to me, you got to do something. So I'm back in the gym.
Okay, this person I believe is right here.
Yeah, this is for Mark and David. The film has a rousing, well-crafted conclusion, but I was wondering if maybe you attempted to go a little further and include the legendary Arturo Botti thoughts that followed.
The story was always one that I thought led him to the doorway of his future. You know, this film delivers him to the ability to dig himself into a real income. You know, and that to me is the, I mean, it's a hard choice, but I think that. I think the story is legendary in itself, how he got there. Because, you know, without this story, he doesn't get those Gotti fights. In fact, the last guy he fight, Neri, was saying, "I'm ready to fight Arturo Gotti." He thought he was going to move right through Mickey, and this guy was supposed to be the next champion, Shane Neri, and he was like, "Me and Gotti would make a great matchup." Well, guess what? You know, it turned out to be the underdog who made the great matchup with Gotti.
And we're doing those fights in the sequel. We'll do 4 more. Fighters. We'll do the first Gotti fight and the sequel, then we'll do the second one and the third installment, and then the fourth and final one will be Mickey.
In Russia.
Yes.
Like, so what you know, one of the things that made this film so beautiful, when he was saying he'd do anything for the picture, every single person up here brought that to the film, and that's just, you can't, that's a rocket ship. You know, Amy said, you know, Amy came and said, you know, she was ready to fight. We were choreographing fight scenes in Whole Foods at like, you know, 11 o'clock at night. Because I'd run into her and go, "Oh, how are we going to do that scene tomorrow?" And then, and, you know, and Amy said, "As long as it happens between action and cut, I can do anything." And that's pretty great with the father of her child standing on the set, you know. That she, and it meant for great chemistry between these guys. He's willing to fight and do anything it takes in the ring, and anything it takes emotionally with him and Amy, or him and his mother, and him and his brother. Melissa transformed herself completely and would go there with the fierceness of throwing those pots and pans, and then break your heart on the porch when she's looking at her son when he's closing the door. There was an unstoppable, "I'll go there." Christian already had the weight off and was shaving the bald spot before we set foot into pre-production. So that's like crazy willingness. You know, there's no debating.
We have time for a couple more questions.
Hi, my question is for Amy. And in the movie, your character gets labeled as an MTV girl. My question is, what's your opinion on that label, and do you think it's fair? Also, did it guide your research in any way?
Well, that was their opinion of her. She was an MTV girl.
Oh, yes, she was.
There we go. No, I think that MTV then was very different.
She's more of a VH1 girl.
That's right.
A little sprinkle of BET.
A dash of Lifetime.
Suffused.
I think, you know, MTV was very different than they actually showed music videos, which I liked. But I think it meant that she was wild, that she was like...
Spring break, titties
yeah.
out.
Yeah, no, just like...
threesomes.
Yeah, the party girl.
That's what Mickey liked.
That's what the sisters said, right? They were like, she's trash. She was trash. I think she still gets accused of it. I don't know. Every here and there. Do I think it's fair? From Charlene's perspective, no. No, she was just a girl trying to make good. You know, trying to deal with what she had.
She's a sweetheart. She's a sweetheart.
She was, you know what struck me about Charlene is that you had all these huge personalities and she never once was like, let me tell you my side of the story. She never did. She always, she was content to sit in the background. As a matter of fact, I think you guys had to really convince her to put herself on tape so I could watch her. Like they really had to talk. She was not about drawing attention to herself. She was really happy that Mickey's story was being told, and she was really supportive of that. So I don't think it was fair.
Okay, final question right here. For Mark and Amy, the chemistry with your characters is so there, but how much work goes into that before you guys start shooting?
It was instant for me. Whoa. She's a sweetheart. You know what? David always says that she doesn't seem like the girl who can throw a punch, but she reminds me of so many girls in my neighborhood. She looks like an Irish Catholic, tough, no-nonsense kind of girl. And, you know, I saw that immediately. You know, they're not quite as pretty as Amy, the girls in my neighborhood. But you know, I was such a huge fan of hers. We'd actually had the luxury of having lunch before to talk about another movie, and it was a bad movie that I did. She dodged the bullet. And then I was still able to, you know, I don't want to tell you what movie. All right, The Happening with them. Fucking trees, man. You know, you can't blame me for not wanting to try to play a science teacher. You know, like, wasn't playing a cop or a crook. But she didn't do the movie, and we got the chance to work together again. And I was very happy about that because I thought she would bring something very special to the table. And again, showing a side of her that I certainly knew she was capable of doing, but she hadn't gotten to show yet.
With Mark, I do. It was pretty instant. It was so easy to work with you. And you know that. And you guys saw him. I mean, for the women in here, you saw him. I mean, like, how hard is it to pretend that you're attracted to that? Like, so, with that being said, with all respect to your wife and my significant other, Mark has a great quality as an actor, and that was able to show. He was able to show that in with Mickey of this vulnerability and a man who's powerful and strong. Yet is able to show tenderness and vulnerability. That's really sexy.
And he's got a full set of teeth in his head as well. Girls
don't notice that. Yeah, I think
so. But you know, David didn't really give us much option because I remember it was the first day and like there wasn't a kiss plan. He's like, okay, and now you kiss, and we're like, we do? Yeah, you kiss. And it was there. Hi, sorry.
Yeah. Romance. Like deeper, romance. Deeper. Romance. And you'd be surprised how many women Dickie has at his beck and call without the teeth. You know, the funny thing is in life, that, and I think in a funny way, I think Christian is more like Mickey and Mark is more like Dickie, not in the bad way, but in the operator way and in the talky-talk way, Christian's more of a quiet guy. And it was very interesting to watch him hang out with Dickie, inhale Dickie, have them hang out together, and people would come up on the set and be like, oh, they thought that was Dickie. And because he talked, he would, and then it kind of led him to talk to everybody all the time, because Dickie doesn't ever shuts up. You know, so Christian would walk around talking to everybody, which, you know, good luck try making that happen when he's not Dickie. And then Mickey, you know, Mickey, as they said, you know, Mickey never says two words. Mickey will just take it. He'll take five punches to give one, and he'll let everybody say everything, and he won't say nothing. You know, and he'll let Dickie do all the talking. So that was a very interesting role for each of these guys, I thought.
I'm quiet.
Sometimes, yeah. Yes, you are also, you have a lot in common with Mickey. It's a little bit of a paradox, but it doesn't fit my comparison then.
I was just hardly ever shut up. My wife tells me to shut up all the time.
Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
You can please stay seated until our guests leave.
Thank you guys. Thank you so much.
Thank you
guys. Thank you. We'll see most of you later, I would imagine.
I don't even know if that's true.
Until Chris tells me, I don't know.
Come on up.
Yeah.
Nice
job. Thank you.
That was interesting.
Were you invited over? For real. What
are
we
going to
see him at later? Are we invited over?
That sounds good.
Okay, we can continue the press conference now.
Also, I mean, whoever made the ropes up, I guess they have a safety.